everybody, welcome to the Fiction File Podcast, where we explore the wide world of narrative entertainment, from movies to literature and everything in between. My name is Jason Boyd. I'm the editor of Fiction File, and I'm joined, as always, remotely today by managing editor Kareen Asbell. Hey, Kareen.
Hey, guys.
All right.
Well, guy, because, you know, it's just us again.
Yeah. So just to kind of explain that, the thing we're talking about today, on short notice, we couldn't really find an expert on it because Dalton is not into this milieu, this genre in general. So we'll just power through with the two of us here. So today we'll be poring over a single work of fiction yet to be announced. Although you could probably guess from the title, we'll see. But after we introduce this work of art, we'll discuss what makes it enjoyable, what makes it a work of art in the first place, what makes it universally relatable, and finally, we'll talk about what it could have done better. So now that we have our format, what piece of narrative entertainment are we talking about today, Kareen?
Today, we're going to be discussing the comic series Preacher. Just the comic series, not the excuse for a television show. The series was created by Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon. It was written by Ennis. While Dillon drew the panels and Glenn Favrey did the covers, colors were done by Matt Hollingsworth and Pamela Rambo. The series was published by Vertigo and ran from 1995 to 2000. It was a total of 66 episodes plus 5 specials and a 3-issue miniseries.
Preacher tells the story of Jesse Custer, a preacher in the small Texas town of Annville. Custer is accidentally possessed by the supernatural creature named Genesis, the infant of the unauthorized, unnatural coupling of an angel and a demon. I think so, Texas Red. Amazon, I'm just going to go right into the critical opinion. we'll talk about the critical opinion now, just to get a brief overview of the historical consensus. Amazon has, you know, all the books, and it has a rating, honestly, of at least 4.5 for every single compendium, every single trade paperback collection of comics. In fact, the final two have like a 4.8. So, and this is with hundreds of reviews. So that's, you know, a clear indication of the users, the readers, and so forth, mm-hmm. just loving this. Goodreads, each book ranges from 4.15 to 4.36. So the median, thanks to Kareen's math skills, is 4.25. So pretty good for Goodreads, because Goodreads is vicious. It's won Eisner Awards out the Yahoo. It won a continuing series in 99. Best writer in 98, best colorist in 97, and best editor in 96. So it's got a pedigree of a critical consensus and readers. So I wonder why we're talking about it. Well, so what makes Preacher enjoyable is our first topic. Kareen, you want to start?
I don't know if it's enjoyable. I mean, I feel a little weird saying that I enjoyed Preacher. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a very powerful story. It's gory and traumatic and extremely unique. I mean, during Jesse's search to find where God's gift off to, we encounter some of the vilest, most sadistic and depressing parts of humanity. I really don't know if I can call it enjoyable. But, I mean, there were moments of dark humor, and I enjoyed those. I enjoyed Jesse getting revenge against his family. I enjoyed mm-hmm. Cassidy a lot.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, I'm a sucker for a character with a lot of irreverence and snark. I wonder why. I just connect with them for some reason.
Yeah. But yeah.
Who knows why?
You especially like snarky men with scruff.
And accents.
Yeah. Well, who can blame you, really? But, And, I mean, Cassidy's kind of steals the show sometimes. So mm-hmm. So for me, what makes Preacher enjoyable, I actually did find it incredibly enjoyable. Of course, I was also like 12, 13 when I read this. So way too young to be reading Preacher. For you kids out there, don't read it yet. But
how are you 12 and...
Huh?
I'm just trying to do math. Sorry, go ahead.
I can't remember how old I was, but I was a child by today's standards, right? But I was a man child, if nothing else. Even if I was 18, I was too young mentally to be reading this. But the thing is, I found it enjoyable because all the, like, you know, kind of potty humor, the dark humor, it just lit me up. So it's hilarious to me, and it's in a dark, twisted way, but it's just wicked funny, and it's got amazing action. Even though it's a comic book and it doesn't have, like, you know, laser beams shooting out of people's eyes or anything, it's just got such cool macho action. It's very Die Hard-esque, you know? And to me, it's more so than any superhero comic book, because there's, for one thing, a legitimate body count. I mean, it's not like people just get punched out. You know, they die in horrible ways. Very much so off the cuff, just kind of like, oh, well, he's dead. Like, there's very little lead up to people dying. People just get their heads blown off. But it adds an extra weight to every conflict because, you know, these people can die. In fact, you know, that happens, right? Like, the main characters are not above dying. And it just has so much machismo. To me, it's like, it appealed to me as a young man or boy. But it's like watching Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. Roadhouse. But pain don't hurt. But it makes it just has that same flavor, which I don't know if that works in 2020, but man, did it work when I read it. So take that for what you will. But let's talk about what makes Preacher a work of art. Now that I've talked about how it's all about machismo and Roadhouse. I'll go ahead and keep this if you don't mind, just so I can kind of
tie your parallel. Subject.
Yeah, exactly. Parallel myself, counter myself.
I'll allow it just this once.
Yes. Okay, so the thing I like about it, and I think makes it kind of a work of art, is that it deals with masculinity, even though it's essentially an action movie. For one thing, you know, there's just lots of talk about what's it like being a man, what's supposed to be being a man. You know, there's Tulip calls him on a lot of sexist stuff. You know, Jesse has some, like, kind of outdated ideas that he's got to work through. Mm-hmm. It does deal with those things as it's presenting very masculine stereotypes. So it still deals with it in kind of a, you know, even-handed way. But then it also dives into the hypocrisy of religion, you know, crisis of faith. Even though they literally confirm the existence of God, there's still a crisis of faith. Mm-hmm. Like, that's such a judo move to me.
It's like, it's like it's God's having the crisis of faith almost.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, you know, okay, so no question God exists, but should you believe in him being, like, a good guy? Does it really matter? But it's crazy. Like, who would think that you could pull that off? It's just the ballsiest work of fiction I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And does that make it art? I think so, because it's daring. It's experimentalism for its form. It's just sheer gall is just breathtaking. Mm-hmm. It does not apologize for itself, and yet it's destined to offend everyone. And so, like, how avant-garde can you get? You know, to me, I think it challenged a lot of things and kind of changed the way that comic books work sometimes. Although we still have kind of a division, but there's more and more Garth Ennis-y type stories out there now with lots of hyper-violence.
Well, I mean, you talked about, like, is it art? And mm-hmm. Does that make it art? Well, I mean, the important thing to remember here with Preacher, and particularly everything that we've discussed in the past and that we're going to discuss in the future, that art really is subjective. Like, right. I can see some things out there, like, you know, for instance, Banksy. There's some beautiful things that Banksy has done, and he uses it to move a message. And I know, like, someone of the older generation, perhaps, might look at it and go, well, he's just vandalizing. That's not art. Right. You know, or even just, like, street art, period, from just, like, your average street artist.
Oh, goodness, yeah. I mean, like, for instance, you know, there's just the putting a tack through a condom on the wall. Does that make it art? You know, there's actual exhibits where that's what is the art on display.
Is that the art, though, or is it the message?
Right, exactly. So it's kind of like, what do you read into what is being presented? And what is the subjective experience you take away from it? And that kind of meditation almost itself is what makes it art.
Yeah, I didn't want you to sell yourself short with the does it make it art? Yeah. You think it's art? It's art.
It's art, baby.
Yeah.
So, Kareem, what do you think makes it a work of art? Now that we've said
laid out the baseline for art,
right?
The definition.
To me,
the story is amazing, and I know. Actually, my last point, it kind of sounded like I didn't really like it, you know, but it's a great story. I've always been a sucker for like the angels and demons type of storylines. I mean, I love me some Lucifer, both the graphic novel and the TV show, because let's be real. Have you seen Tom Ellis? But anyways, I like Garth Ennis's take on the heaven and hell religious myths. And I'm sure there are other similar takes, you know, the child of angels and demons. As a matter of fact, I could probably put together a listicle if need be, but this is one of the first ones that I actually, no.
It'll give me ideas.
Maybe. Okay, sign me up for it. But this is one of the first like stories I remember that dealt with, you know, the offspring of angels and demons. And then you've got God who just abandoned his job and creations. And that was what I was talking about earlier when I was talking about the leap, when I interrupted you to talk about the leap of faith. Or God actually just kind of like gave up.
Yeah.
Went on a wander. But you got that. Jesse getting power of the word of God, letting him influence anyone. And like, I really feel bad for that one cop in the Sheriff first Root. Book. Even yeah. He was a giant racist homophobe. And he deserved all manner of bad things to happen to him. But that... You know, that's just a little, I got to feel bad about that, you know? While it's hilarious, obviously, but then again, I'm not a guy, so I might find it funnier than the guys do. But, you know, and then we could deal with Jesse and his nut job family, the global religious conspiracy, et cetera, et cetera. But all of these stories are fully fleshed out. We don't at any point feel like this was rushed. Like, oh, I wish we'd spent more time on this. I mean, for the most part, the minor characters have really full, well-developed backstories. They have character growth. It's just, it's like a pretty amazing story. It's like well-developed, well-thought-out, and it's just, I mean, it's 66 issues plus, you know, the others. So it should have plenty of time to do this, but it's got so many different arcs crammed into it that to have them all, like, not leave me going, well, that was rushed, is a work of art, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, and, you know, I think with the Sheriff Root stuff, I feel like, and they kind of address this, that it's like Jesse kind of doesn't really understand the full weight of his powers at first. So he just uses them willy-nilly, and he's like, you know, I really shouldn't be doing this to these people.
Yeah, it was just a slip of the tongue, and it's one of those things that kind of, like, underlines how important it is for him to watch what he says. And at that point, you can even kind of take it as a very – not at all subtle metaphor of the importance of thinking before you speak.
Right. And I think it's like him getting control of his anger too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, his not just acting out, you know, and speaking before you think because you're so angry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's talk about our next topic. What makes Preacher universally relatable? So I'll go ahead and take this one. And yeah, for me, it grew up with, for a person like me who grew up with dads who loved Westerns, I mean, my dad just loved Westerns too much. Like, it was just, I don't know. It's just always like, oh, there's a Western on. We need to watch this instead of whatever you want to watch.
I can just completely see your dad, like, shoving little Jason out of the way of the TV and saying, Bonanza's on.
Oh, he loved Bonanza. Like, literally, like, the stereotype of the dad who watches Bonanza, which is just a joke.
But how about Gunsmoke?
Yes, he liked Gunsmoke. Yep. he liked all of that stuff. But, you know, that's what I grew up with. I have an old dad. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 34. He's 77. So he was like 40-ish when I was born. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he kind of comes from that old school super masculine. I mean, he has his moments where he's not a closed off weirdo. You know, he can be emotional and sympathetic and stuff. He's a good dad, but he was definitely very masculine. And so to me, the preacher to me is about masculinity, and it takes the whole God versus man motif as a literal God versus a man. And I mean, you got honor, moral code, stupid risk, courage, grit, and a little bit of dumbass. And even though I hadn't gone through the things that were reflected upon, although I would later, you know, in other words, like I never encountered a moral dilemma before when I read this. Like I was just a kid, but still, like, it was relatable because it was something I was very interested in, wanting to be the best man I could be as I was growing up. And then as an adult, it's very relatable because I could look back and go, damn, you know, I've been in some of these situations, not quite the, you know, like a,
not a the war. Supernatural part of it, but
yeah, I haven't had any tanks coming after me either, you know. But,
what kind of boring ass life have you been living?
I know. I didn't go overseas or something, but you know, it's still relatable both when I read it the first time and looking back, and I've reread it. It just there's just something magical about it, and I do want to say, as relatable as it is, and I'm interesting to hear your take. As relatable it is for me, I do question how relatable it is for other genders. Just because to me, I'm wondering if it's kind of an isolation chamber effect and it's just telling me what I want to hear, or if it's something that is deeper. So, Kareen, what do you think makes Preacher universally relatable?
Well, to me, the most relatable part of this is Tulip. Even though I personally think she's about as interesting a character as wallpaper paste. Right. But this comic was actually really ahead of its time in the late 90s. I mean, it's surprisingly very forward-thinking, despite the rampant racism, homophobia, and misogyny that are, I can't even say scattered, liberally spread throughout the pages, maybe. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, can you go more than two pages without getting racism, homophobia, or misogyny?
Yeah.
From the other characters, yeah.
It's kind of like it's embedded, and you're not sure if the author is on that side or not.
Well, honestly, it's kind of, especially in the first book, it's more sadly indicative of a small Texas town in the late 90s, and honestly in 2020. So, you know.
Yeah.
But despite all, and I mean all of that, Tulip is regularly throughout the series trying to teach Jesse to not be a garbage person and to learn from his mistakes. And they regularly argue with each other about feminism, and Jesse truly listens and tries to adapt, which actually at that point, that's not very relatable, because let's be real. How many times does a guy want to listen to you talk about feminism and try to change?
Aww.
I'm kidding. Hashtag not all men, whatever. Anyway. But, you know, a lot of that helps that Jesse actually listens is because he does have the positive role models in his life, particularly with John Wayne, you know, mm-hmm. he's something you guys have in common. John Wayne's yep. sitting there telling him to be good, and his father was trying to teach him to not judge people on their looks, but on their behavior. And I really don't want to have to compare every work we discuss to issues that are prominent in today's society, but it's really hard not to. I don't know if that says more about what we're choosing or just how trash society is kind of right now. So I'll just leave it at this. If more people like Jesse would just listen and not argue to the tulips in the world that are trying to explain things, things would just be so much easier.
Well, I can't really argue with that. But it's, you know, I think that it's totally okay to view any and all things through a lens of what's happening today. I mean, that's just a broadly viable way to critique art. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, proceed. But I do agree with a lot of that.
Well, no, I just wish that when I was talking about things that were relatable, I could talk about, you know, like I related to this character because, you know, they're such a badass despite, you know, they had this trauma in their life or something like that. I hate having to relate to, well, garbage shit is happening in this universe. Also, coincidentally, garbage shit is happening in the real world.
Yeah, and we kind of do. There's a thing in comics like this, or not even comics, but just fiction mm-hmm. like this, where you have a woman is considered more of a badass the more masculine she is. Mm-hmm.
That's actually a point that's going to come up in one of our next podcasts.
Oh, really? Nice. Cool. So, but it's like, you know, it's like the only other woman we see, like we see, I don't want to give it away, but we see some women who are related to the characters. We see things like that. And they're the only badassery is the extent that they're like a man. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't mind that gender, you know, is fluid and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time, it's like, well, you could just show someone being feminine, but still being a really good, strong person, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you could see someone like totally, you know, like very feminine, even, you know, like the literal, like textbook definition of feminine, because, you know, we have to have descriptions for everything because we are a garbage society. If I haven't mentioned that in the past 5 minutes. But, you know, have them all dolled up, makeup up, dressed up, and still, you know, going out kicking ass, you know.
Yeah.
Or, like, going in there and just, like, solving all the problems. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. Someone that doesn't – because someone dresses in jeans and combat boots versus someone in heels and a skirt doesn't make them a better fighter. And we shouldn't have to, like, do that to show that this person –
Right. And I mean, there's even things like, I don't know, I don't want to divert too much, but like one of the best examples of a feminine badass to me, this is kind of a weird reference, but The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock. Mm. Like, I felt like she was your typical Texas, you know, dolled up kind of like woman who was supposed to be like the pretty one.
But still yet took no prisoners.
She took no prisoners, and she was just very, you know, resolute. But yeah, at the same time, not really masculine because she wasn't combative as much as she was just a force of nature.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's the kind of thing where it's like, I just don't want a woman to be on the scale of good, bad, and there's a correlation between masculine, feminine, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you.
They should be distinct from one another.
Yeah.
But let's move on with the topics just so that we don't spend all day talking about
Preacher.
I think we are, you know. But what could Preacher have done better, Kareem?
Well, personally, I really felt the story could have been trimmed down a lot. It felt very bloated. Well, bloaty's a word too. And if this was a for some reason, I thought of Hootie and the Blowfish right there. But If this was a movie, I would accuse the filmmakers of just trying to pad the runtime.
Right.
I mean, we've discussed earlier how I felt about Tulip's character. So maybe this has something to do with the fact that I don't give a shit about Tulip and Jesse's past relationship, their eventual reconnection. It just felt long and drawn out. And I really stopped caring about them working through their issues about halfway through the run. I mean, it was very tedious, and obviously I read their parts the first time I read the novels, but on the subsequent rereads, I kind of just skip right over those pages because I literally do not care. Like, I don't care if they work their shit out. I don't care what happens. You know, Tulip is just the most boring character ever. But, and I know a lot of people say that the entire series is about Jesse and Tulip's love story. And I say to those people, what are you on? But, you know, maybe it is. Maybe, what do I know? But, you know, the story to me just reads great without delving into that slow slog that is their relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to. You brought up an interesting point that I want to talk about, which is love stories in stories. So you have a like a movie like a love story. Well, that's about the love story. You have rom coms. That's about the love story. Mm-hmm. But when you have a story that just also has a love story, because all friggin' movies nowadays have to have a love story. So you see that a lot. But what a love story does, from a writing craft standpoint and from just a thematic standpoint, is it takes what the overall fiction is dealing with, the themes and the, you know, just subjects that are coming up, and it brings it down to a passion level, because relationships are, you know, passion and love, and it kind of helps intensify by being a microcosm of the larger themes. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you can almost say that any story is about the love story, because it's going to be a microcosm of what the story is. So it's like, it's kind of a chicken and the egg, you know?
Yeah. I'm just saying this. It might have been a better love story between Jesse and Cassidy. I'm just saying.
Maybe. You know, I think there is a bromance. There's some fantastic bromance moments. And there's even the very seldom talked about aspect of a bromance where sometimes you got to kick your best friend's ass. Like, sometimes you just got to. Like, that's going to happen at least one time in a lifelong friendship with another man. Like, as a man, you're going to just get in a fight. But you got to be able to, like, repair things afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
good. That's why we work out so well with our bromance here.
Honestly, I think any friendship, you know, and I've done enough therapy to convince me that this is the case, that basically any friendship is really only a friendship once it's seen the test of, you know, conflict. Mm-hmm. So it's like that solidifies a friendship, because you can overcome things and you're always stronger afterwards.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of true. Like, especially if you think about it, and let's take you and I, since, you know, we're the only ones here. You know, I've known you since what? 2006?
Yeah.
14 years?
Right. Yeah, sounds right.
You know, MassCom. And, you know, we've been good friends, but I really got to say that I think the, I don't know if it really applies as conflict here because of the upheaval in your life. Timed with a fiction file and all this, I think that has cemented our friendship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Not to divulge too much, but, you know, I've had a rough 2020 like everyone else has.
But you had a rough 2019 too.
I did. So I've had a rough couple of years, and Kareen's been like glue. And I really appreciate that.
Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, that's an interesting point to think about it. Cause like, on the flip side, the other half of your interesting year, that friendship hasn't gelled as much. You know?
Yeah.
Anyways, yep. Preacher.
Well, you know, and I want to speak about the lore. I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartedly. And part of the I'm looking on Amazon and they don't seem to agree. The ratings are pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. But like, if we're just going off of, you know, not individual comics, but collections, you know, volumes, mm-hmm. The seventh volume to me is the absolute nadir. It's the bottom. It's the one with the guy with meat, you know, Salvation, where he's like a sheriff. It's a whole thing. And that is actually what they took and started the TV show with, which is just a whole nother reason for why I'm not a fan of the TV
show. They didn't start it at the beginning?
No, they didn't start. I mean, well, they kind of did, but they put all the meat stuff in the thing. You know what I'm saying?
What? I haven't watched the show at all.
Okay.
Because I didn't possibly, I looked at it. I saw the, keep hitting my microphone. Sorry about that, y'all. I looked at it and I saw the trailer and I'm like, okay, but there's no way this is going to be as good.
Yeah.
So like, what and plus I don't have cable or TV.
So they start it in Anvil, but they basically take the Preacher Salvation collection with the guy with the meat. You know, it's a woman made out of meat that he sleeps with. They take that and wedge it in there. So it's like, oh, Anvil has a big meat plant you didn't know about, you know?
Oh, and fancy. Come on.
So he's like the main bad guy for the first season. And it's just like, this is stupid. Anyway, I will digress. I know there's people who like that show, but I will just say it's a different breed altogether from the actual comic.
In a defense of the Amazon reviews, there was never like one book to me that just felt completely useless. The books were always interesting. Sure. There was just always parts in it that I would be like, this could go, you know, like if I was making a movie out of this, I'm like, this is on the cutting room floor or this is going, you know?
Right.
It's never like it was a whole story.
Yeah, it's very much like, you know, we almost got the director's cut as the main release. And, you know, we could have done without some of those scenes, but like, okay, well, I see why they put them in there, you know?
Well, and I'm really kind of disappointed that like, because you guys, I mean, well, Dalton liked the series that he'd seen of it, so
and that is why he is not allowed into this podcast episode.
And that's why we're gonna have to take all his opinions in the future with a grain of salt. And I was really disappointed because I thought about watching it, because when, like, I don't know like how much our listeners even care about the process, but I'm the one that chooses what we talk about. And when I pitched Preacher to you, and I remember I was asking you, like, do you want to do the TV show? Because, you know, it's on my watch list. You know, I'm really bad at watching things. And you're like, hell no. I'm like, okay. And that just made me take it right out of my queue.
Yeah, I just, I was disappointed, but anyway,
let's stop padding the runtime of the podcast.
Yeah, we're pat. You know how ironic that the runtime is getting longer, and this is the part we could cut out. But back to the topic at hand, what could Preacher have done better? For me, you know, I'm kind of at the cop out stage with this one. I don't think there's much.
I don't think you've had a cop out yet.
Yeah, I kind of want to take my one, you know, cop out this time.
Please,
but I do agree that it's a little long and winding. But, you know, like you said, every, you know, setting has a point and some good highlights, some less so than others. But there's still moments where you're like, well, I still would want that. I just don't know where I would put it.
Yeah.
But there's parts where the story drags. And I think not to give too much away because everyone's seen the art probably. But after Jesse loses his eye, I feel like there's just a good portion that's kind of slow. But then again, you kind of want slow moments in a story. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. They're just parts that didn't connect with me like the rest.
Yeah, there's a difference between like being always, 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 always action
Yeah.
And, you know, having to pull back time to reflect. And then, okay, if I keep reading this page, I'm going to take a nap. Right. Especially when you're doing with a medium that you have to, you know, move the pages yourself,
yeah.
which sounds lazy as hell. But if the story's not like completely entertaining the whole time, sometimes it's hard to turn that page. It's hard to get through. Like, I don't know how many times, like, I have a Kindle Unlimited subscription and I pull down a lot of books because I'm like, oh, the cover art looks cool. The description looks cool. And I'll be reading it. And there'll be sometimes like I'm 3/4 of the way through a book and I'm just like, this is boring. And I stop reading it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why they have the page turner.
There's a reason why that's a thing, yeah.
Yeah. But moving to our final topic, final thoughts about Preacher. I'll go ahead and tell mine first. I love the comic book. I love this comic. And but then again, I also love the documentary The Aristocrats, which features the most lewd, ridiculously offensive joke of all time, and I won't tell it here.
Why not?
Because it's like X-rated. But
I like what's our podcast rated?
I don't know. It's a little south of the X.
Okay,
just
go ahead.
South of X. I like free speech that crosses the line. I think there's a reason they talk in this comic book explicitly about Bill Hicks, George Carlin, and, you know, all that so much. They talk about the 7 things you can't say, that kind of stuff. And then they just talk about their general views on obscenity and all that. And the comic itself is obscene. And I find that the realest form of comedy because it's so close to the bone. It's not holding. I mean, a comic who is obscene doesn't always have to be obscene, mm-hmm. but you know that they are not holding anything back. But if they aren't obscene, you're kind of like, why aren't you talking about sex? Like, that's like 30% of what humans do.
Yeah.
But, you know, but when fiction goes in that direction, it unveils something about the character of its characters because it's dealing so close to the bone. And Jesse is a good man, but he's not perfect. He's kind of a dinosaur of masculinity. He's a relic of an older time. But should he be disposed of entirely, or is there a lot to be salvaged? And I think you can kind of see the same things now with cancel culture, although I kind of like cancel culture because if it includes canceling rapists, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, there's an argument for cancel culture being a great thing.
Right. But like, I get the whole, you know, there's kind of a debate on, are we too PC? I mean, I do think that we need to talk about it. And in fact, I think Preacher, even though it crosses that line of PC, itself is talking about whether you should cross that line or not. Cause just to circle back saying, I like things that cross the line. I like it because then you know where the line is.
That's
if you don't
point.
Ever, if you don't ever cross the line, you don't know where the line is because it's an imaginary line. So you have to trigger that intuition of, ooh, that crossed the line to figure out where the line is. So, Corinne, what are your final thoughts?
My final thought is that was a really good point about the line. And my other final thought is my ear hurts.
Yeah, I'm talking so loud.
No, I'm stretching my earlobes. And I just got the 2-gauge yesterday.
Nice.
And it really hurts with my headphones on.
Nice.
I just gotta share that with y'all. I have a lot of issues and feelings and things I'm going through right now with my love life and my ears and my personal life and all that. So I just had to share that with you guys because you're literally a captive audience at this point.
Exactly. Well, very good.
My final thoughts about Preacher is the comic has not aged well at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all. But overall, it's got a good storyline and the established mythos and the lore. But there are too many casual uses of the N-word. There's too much ableism and fat shaming and just mocking of disabilities for it to be held up today's standards. And I know that goes back to talking about, like, we just discussed the line and, you know, they're crossing the line by bringing all this in. But it really just went kind of overboard on some of it. Yeah. You know, maybe some of these, like, I'm more sensitive to than the average person because, you know, I am disabled, and I am fat, and maybe I'm just sensitive when they're making fun, but
no,
I don't think you would get away with it today. But despite that, and I really feel weird saying, despite all, again, the racism and homophobia and all that stuff, and the meandering plot that it struggles with at times, it's a good story. I mean, it starts out really dark and twisted and somehow manages to get even worse. Like, I don't even know how you can. Like, and I don't mean worse, like, the book starts out good and it's garbage by the end of it. I mean, it starts out dark, like almost like pitch black, and somehow it's like Vanta black by the end of the story. Like, it just got that much darker.
Yeah.
But personally, like, the best way to sum it up while I smack my microphone again is I think it's a story that should be on most people's to be read list. It's one of those comic stories that, especially if you are a comics reader and you just, I mean, other than just superhero, like, I'm not knocking Marvel and DC because I love them, but I love a lot of these stories like this that aren't your typical comics. Like, when you think of comics, you think of Superman, you think of Batman, you know, you don't think of Preacher, Transmetropolitan, things like that, you know? So
yeah,
that's just what I can sum it up as. It's got a good storyline. It's kind of shitty with the way they talk, but you should read it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. So well put. So where can I read this series, Kareem?
Well, you can read Preacher digitally online through Amazon and their Comixology app. According to the website, it's part of their Comixology Unlimited program, which is a monthly subscription similar to Kindle Unlimited, as far as I know. I don't have it. I already have 42 monthly subscription services. Now, you know, if we can work this into the budget, you know. But anyway, but you can also buy the graphic novels in physical format. And I know this is where we usually plug Amazon.com and go through our affiliate link on fictionfile.com and buy them that way. But I just want to say, especially because we're in hard times right now, why don't you check out your local comic book store, check out your local library, and then if you can't find them that way, then go to Amazon.com. But first, go to fictionfile.com and click on our affiliate link.
Right. Well, and I'll say this. If you want to read it digitally and you want to do the Kindle Unlimited or what have you, or the Comixology Unlimited, if you click through Amazon on our website and then sign up, we will get a taste of that.
Oh, there we go.
So go ahead and do that if you want it digitally. But otherwise, yeah, I agree. Support your local comic book stores, especially during this time. And, you know, libraries are something that needs to be supported as well. And, you know, readership and checking out things actually helps their stats. So for sure.
Especially
if you want physically, do that.
Especially if you're here in Texas in the Dallas area. I know personally, because I know people that work for the Dallas Public Library, tough times.
Yeah.
Let's get back to our libraries and start reading. Let's get back to our comic stores. Let's save them. Because how much fun is it to go into a comic store and just browse? Like, you have no idea what you're in there. You get there, like the last time I think I went to Red Pegasus, I came out with Ghost Spider and, like, Gwynpool and, like, I don't even know what else.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's it's one of the many social aspects of our society that have been kind of dwindling because of all the coronavirus stuff. But
Jeff Bezos doesn't need any more money.
Yeah, yeah, as we're slowly coming back, let's not just throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's try to still do those things in person when we can.
Yes, let's save the comic stores. I will never meet people otherwise.
Right.
I need to be with my people.
So speaking of meeting people, where could we find you, Kareem, on the interwebs if we want to find you on a social?
I'm really glad you finished with that part of on the interwebs and social, because otherwise I was going to be like begging on the corner. You can find me on Instagram. My Instagram is nonlinear girl, or you can find me on Twitter, and my handle is nonlinear girl with a zero.
Nice. And you can find me as Sage Hazard, which with two Z's, on Instagram, and The Fiction File on Twitter, not to be confused with the official Fiction File Twitter, which is Fiction File MAG as in magazine.
Or so, the official Fiction File Instagram.
Yes.
Fiction File Online.
Yes, Fiction File Online. If you want to do the Instagram, we're kind of revitalizing that one. So that might be something you guys want to check out if you use Instagram. So thank you so much, Kareen, my only co-host this episode. You've been lovely.
As always. So,
yeah.
Oh, wait, can I say that about myself?
I thought you were saying about me, but, you know, you can say it about yourself.
Jason, you are a lovely human being, and you have been a great person to me in my time of strife and heartbreak that I am going through right now.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for being part of the friend council that allows me to make decisions about guys.
Yes, the mighty friend council. But thank you, Kareen. Always there for you. So that's it for this installment of the Fiction File podcast. I want to invite you guys listening to fictionfile.com for more scintillating analysis like you heard today. And please don't forget to rate us if you like today's episode. It really helps. If you rate it, comment, whatever you need to do, and subscribe or follow to make sure you don't miss the next episode. That really helps us a lot.
And it makes us feel better.
And it honestly soothes our wounds. So please do that. And, you know, we want to hear from you guys. So, you know, make sure to connect with us on those socials we mentioned. Until the next episode, I want to thank you guys for spending a little story time with us today. And for Kareen Asbell, this is Jason Boyd and the Fiction File family wishing you a happily ever after.